1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 6. Simon Harris was teaching 1 Timothy over there this past week, and I stole a couple of charts from him that will come in here at slide number 10 and 11 on this particular topic of contentment. He said one thing in particular that I want to share with you when we get to that point. But first off, let's read the text, 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 6. But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, for neither can we carry anything out. But having food and covering, we shall be therewith content. But they that are minded to be rich fall into a temptation and a snare and many foolish and hurtful lusts, such as drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, which some reaching after have been led astray from the faith and have pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But you, O man of God, flee these things and follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, meekness. Fight the good fight of the faith. Lay hold on the life eternal, whereunto you were called, and did confess the good confession in the sight of many witnesses. Paul also says in Philippians 4:11, he says, not that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am, therein to be content. So I want us all to think this morning about how well have we learned that lesson. To be content. 1 Timothy 6, if we have food and covering, we should be content. There are people in this world, and whether it be war-torn nations or corrupt nations or nations hit by famine or other disasters, who would love to have food and covering, and would be very happy to have food and cover. Our nation is full of discontented people who have so much more than that. What contentment is not, finding contentment does not mean the rejection of improvement. For instance, if there's an opportunity in your work to attain a promotion and better serve your company and make better income for your family and stuff, it doesn't mean that you have to say, well, I'm not going to try for that. I have to be content. You know, if your car is breaking down on you and it's not running well, I just need to be content. You know, this one doesn't run. It doesn't mean that you can't improve your lot or want to improve your lot. For instance, in Genesis chapter 40, Joseph, when he's in prison, does he say, yeah, I think I just want to stay here? No, he says to the servant of Pharaoh, who's interpreted a dream, listen, when you get out, remember me to Pharaoh. You know, Joseph's wanting his situation to be improved. But what do you see about the life of Joseph wherever he is? And he definitely had some ups and some downs. What was he busy doing? He was doing what was good. Do you see somebody, you know, just wallowing in self-pity? No, you see somebody doing what's good. Paul in Acts chapter 22 through 25, he's being charged with something he didn't do. And he's saying, wait, you can't beat me without a trial. I'm a Roman citizen. He appeals to Caesar. When there's a threat against him, that 40 men have vowed they're going to kill him, he doesn't say, well, I guess I'll just come. No, he does something about it to protect himself. So it doesn't mean you can't have any plans or ambition or want to improve things better for you or others. It doesn't mean you have to have a kind of stoical disinterest. The way we use the word stoic today is not actually what the Stoics were, but stoic today means that you just kind of avoid pain and pleasure. In other words, it's kind of like Spock. Remember on Star Trek? You know, if something good happened, is Spock excited? If something bad happens, is Spock upset? So he's kind of the classical modern portrayal of stoic. You just flatlined it. And is Jesus that way when he's in the garden praying? He's in great agony, and yet he's realizing what? And recognizing, not my will, but yours be done. In Romans 12, 15, Paul tells us to do what? Weep with those that, and rejoice with those that rejoice. It doesn't say you shouldn't be weeping. It doesn't say you shouldn't be happy about that. That's part of life. There's things to rejoice for, and there's things to weep over. But contentment is a bigger picture than that. Contentment is that spot way away from, but between despair and discontent. So on the one hand, you have people that are discontented. They are not happy. And they tend to make people around them not happy. And they're not happy, why? Because I haven't gotten what I want. You know, it may be the person standing in line buying all those lotto tickets. You know, it may be that really crabby person at work that's always trying to talk somebody else down and manipulate things there, but they're just, it may be that grouchy person at the nursing home who's gone through a lifetime of selfishness and now doesn't like the way life turned out. It may be the person that, oh, I was going to be a millionaire and it never happened or whatever. But they think, if I could just get what I want, I'll be happy. I remember talking to a young lady that was wanted to leave her husband, and did. And I asked her, I said, why do you want to leave? She said, I'm not happy. I'm not happy with him, and I'm not happy in this apartment. I said, were you happy when you married him? No. I said, have you ever been happy? No. I said, changing men and changing apartments is not going to make you happy. But there are those people, and you know those people, right? That they think that if I could get famous, that if I could make it to the big leagues, that if I had enough money, that if this disease went away, then I'd be happy. And on the other end, there's just despair. It's never going to happen. I'm never going to get any money. I'm never going to get any better. But instead of an acceptance and a contentment, it's just despair. Hopelessness. Everything's empty. Or vanity of vanities. All is vanity. In Ecclesiastes, you see that. And with Judas, you see that. On the other hand, in Ecclesiastes 5:10, it talks about going after wealth, what? He that loves gold, which he's not going to be satisfied with. Gold. Nor he that loves silver with the increase. Not going to be satisfied. King Saul. You got to be king. You blew it. Does he accept that? No. His son accepts it. He doesn't. And you just see this miserable decline. Contentment is being able to be content. It is going to involve rejoicing, and it's going to involve weeping, but to have an underlying contentment. Most everybody knows this prayer. You might have it cross-stitched and hanging in your kitchen. Somebody back in the 30s, I think, first published this. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. The courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. A lot of power in that. In a minute, we're going to read each of these texts in a little bit more detail. But first, I just want you to think about these three aspects that are involved in contentment. One is just an acceptance of reality. And sometimes reality is not what we want it to be. A lot of times reality is not what we want it to be. And one part of contentment is learning to accept what reality is. Another part is going beyond that and being thankful for what we have. And then having a higher perspective. So you're looking at the things that are more important rather than less important. Before we go through the verses, I want to illustrate this with children. So I want you to think about attitudes that we can see in our children, and unfortunately, maybe sometimes see in ourselves. So, car trip, and you're going to see gradations here of maturity. You're on a car trip. What is the thankful child? And you got to drive 5 hours, 11 hours, 17 hours, however far you're going that day. And the thankful child is doing what? They're enjoying the view. You know, wow, this is pretty country. I've never seen this area before. The child that's at least accepting, they're not enjoying the view, but they're wanting to get to the destination, see grandma or whatever, and they realize what? You got to endure the trip. So, we'll get there. And then, does this guy look familiar? I'm bored. Are we there yet? Sports. You've just lost. The other team had a great play. And really nice finish, maybe it was a comeback, won on a great play, and you can be happy for them. You say, great play, good game. And not just the, you know, that you have to do, but actually mean it. And then there's the more neutral, can't win them all. That's right, you can't, so accept that. And then there's this guy, stupid game. Supper. There's a kid, thank you for dinner. He realizes the trouble you've gone into it. There's good food there. He's excited about it. More neutral is, that's not my favorite, but that's okay. And then there's this guy. Yuck. I don't want to eat that. As adults, we can have some of these same attitudes too. And by the way, sometimes the view is really, really rotten. And so there's not a lot to enjoy about it. And so you have to just understand we got to go through Newark or that industrial section or whatever. You know, part of life is like that. Let's start with 2 Corinthians 4 in these four texts right there. 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Verse 7, we have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the exceeding greatness of the power may be of God and not from ourselves. We are pressed on every side, yet not straitened. Perplexed, yet not unto despair. Pursued, yet not forsaken. Smitten down, yet not destroyed. Look at verse 16. Wherefore we faint not. Because whatever troubles or problems you and I have faced this past week, would anybody like to just trade those troubles for all the troubles Paul had? The stoning, the being beaten, the imprisonment, the facing death, the brethren stabbing you in the back. And how does Paul describe his afflictions? Look at it in verse 16. Wherefore we faint not, though our outward man is decaying, yet our inward man is renewed day by day, for our light affliction. Now, he hadn't gone through all of it yet. There's more to come that he hasn't gone through yet. But at this point, he's already gone through a lot. The stoning is in the past, the being beaten with rods of Philippi, et cetera, et cetera. And he says, our light affliction, which is what? It's for the moment. Do you see that? Works for us more and more an exceedingly an eternal weight of glory, while we look not at the things that are seen, but at things that are not seen. Because the things that are seen are temporary, and the things that are not seen are eternal. You see that perspective? With all the miserable things that have been happening to him, he's not looking at the temporary issues here that are going to pass, he's looking at what's eternal. 1 Timothy chapter 6, turn back, let's look at a couple points from that. It's the passage we read before. Godliness with contentment is great gain. We neither brought anything to the world, neither can we carry anything out. Like Job said, naked I came, naked I'll go. And like Jim reminded us at the Lord's Supper, when we leave this life, what is the one thing we need? The blood of Jesus Christ. The rest is going to be gone. Having food and covering, we shall be therewith content. You can lose something and dreadfully wish you hadn't lost it, but you still need to be able to learn to be content. Most of us have two legs. I had a friend of mine years ago. He had lost one leg in a motorcycle accident. And I'm sure he would have been happy if he could have that leg. But not having that leg didn't stop him. And picture two people. One person loses a leg and spends all their time thinking about how unfair it is that they don't have a leg. He's got two legs, she's got two legs, they've all got two legs. Why do I only have to have one? Is that going to give them their leg back? He still had this one. It was amazing what he could do with that one. So I had a four on the floor, manual shift. He could drive it, you know, with one leg. Clutch, brake, accelerator, that one leg. You know, we'd go bowling. He could go bowling. I wrestle. I'm a pretty good wrestler. I tried to throw him down. I couldn't throw him down. It was just what he could. He was in Special Olympics later. It was amazing what he could do with that one leg. When we don't appreciate what we can have, we can even lose that. Some of you know this story. I'll make it fairly short, but I did something really stupid on our honeymoon. We were on Smith Lake, and we'd been out in a boat. Jonathan's already laughing. It's getting toward night. I've got some steaks I bought at the store. I'm going to grill out and everything. We're in Bertina's folks' boat, and it's a big boat with, you know, the big inboard V8 motor and everything. And I crank it up, and Smith Lake is kind of like a bunch of rivers because it's a big flooded area. So it's nobody else is on the water at this point. I'm sailing along. It's dead in the water. And we're out of gas. And Bertina's saying, jiggle it. And I had not paid attention. Her dad told me, apparently, there was a folder with boat instructions. There was a second fuel tank. All you had to do was flip a switch. I didn't look at that. So here's my problem. I'm out here on the boat. I've got one paddle. This is a big boat. You can't do that. So how am I going to do anything with one paddle? So I hang over the front, and I'm hanging over, and I'm not making much progress at all. So I put everything into it, and I am pushing, and just going as hard and strong as I can to try to get some speed up, and then I finally stop and look up to see how well I'm going. And it's just like this. And I took that oar and I slapped the water and broke it in two. At that point, I would have been happy to go back to what I had, because a few minutes before, I had an oar. Now, by being stupid, I don't have that. Godliness with contentment is great gain. I've learned whatsoever state I am to be content. From Simon, how to find contentment. Replace physical wants with spiritual pursuits. There in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 11. You, O man of God, flee these things, follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, meekness. What are you focused on? What did Paul say in 2 Corinthians 4? I'm not looking at the things that are temporary. I'm looking at the things that are eternal. Be rich in good works. Chapter point two there from 6:18. Don't compare yourself to others. Don't keep score. If you're keeping score, it's not for his glory. Think about some people in the Bible that were keeping score. Mark chapter 9, verse 34. The disciples walk up to Jesus, and he says, what were you talking about on the road? And nobody wants to answer. Because what had they just been talking about on the road? Talking about who was the greatest. Numbers chapter 16, Korah. Okay, let's see what Korah had. Korah had been a slave, and he has been delivered from slavery. You think that's a positive? Goes out to Mount Sinai. God says, you will be my people. I'm going to be your God. You're going to be my people. The blessings, you know, I'm going to take you to a land that flows with milk and honey. This should be something positive. Plus, he happens to be a Levite. He was a tribe that was going to have some special privileges and stuff. But he doesn't get to be Moses. He doesn't get to do everything Moses does. And so he kind of pitches a fit and gets swallowed up by the earth. 1 Corinthians chapter 12. These Corinthians who are lacking love think what they really need is more speaking in tongues because he can speak in tongues and I can't. And then you have Peter in John 21 where Jesus tells Peter how he's going to die. And what does Peter say? What about him? And what's Jesus' answer? If I want him to live till I come again, what's that to you? And this was the point particularly I want to share with you from Simon said. Look at Romans chapter 5. One of the problems with being content is that sometimes things are going really, really wrong and really, really badly with lots of suffering and tribulation. Romans 5, verse 3. Not only so, but we also rejoice in our tribulations, knowing that the tribulation works steadfastness, and steadfastness, approvedness, and approvedness, hope. Are you and I going to have tribulation in our lives? Are we going to have suffering in our lives? Yes, we are. It can produce endurance, steadfastness, which produces hope. But we can rob ourselves of that. When we face difficulty and all we do is feel sorry for ourselves and get bitter, two things have happened. The problem didn't go away. And we just robbed ourselves from the opportunity to have become stronger. In other words, you've gone through the pain of the tribulation and you've rejected the benefit of the strengthening of it. Be thankful. When I'm not content, I'm saying God hasn't taken care of me. It's easy to overlook what you already have. Be like Jesus, empty yourselves. And when you're a Christian, there's nothing better. Contentment, we're about to wind up here. Content versus discontent often involves the difference between not being satisfied till you get what you want versus being grateful enough to want what you've got. So my friend with one lack. If he had said, I'm never going to be happy until I have a leg again, then he could never be happy. If he decides, I'm going to use this leg that I've still got, then he can enjoy that. Question, what would you be willing to give up in exchange for getting what you want? There's things that most everybody would like to have. And right now, if you've got everything you want, enjoy it right now, because you're not pretty soon. Health is one of those things. You're going to lose your health. You're either going to lose your health or you're going to die healthy. And if you die healthy, then everyone looks at a tragedy. He was so healthy. She was so healthy. And they just died. But the alternate is you lose your health and then you die. That's part of life. But whether it's health, whether it's something else, whether it's money, whatever it is that you think, if I could get that, what would you be willing to give up in exchange for getting what you want? Like, I would give up so much to be able to go back to November 16th, 2013, and talk to Adam and tell him that river's going to be swollen and don't get in that river. But I can't get that back. Would I be willing to give up? Yes. I can't. But be careful what you'd be willing to give up, because some people are willing to give up their souls. Matthew 16:26. What shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? But here's perhaps the more profound question. Not what would you be willing to give up to get what you want? What have you been willing to give up in exchange for not getting what you want? Because there's a lot of people that have given up peace, contentment, love, joy, relationships, and still didn't get what they want. So if you're in a situation, I can't get what I want, and so you sacrifice your soul and still don't get what you want. You sacrifice your happiness and still don't get what you want. You sacrifice your energy in just being mad and angry and feeling sorry for yourself, and you still don't get what you wanted. But did we give up something in exchange for it? If you're in a difficult marriage, you can't decide to improve the other person, but you can decide to what? Improve this person. And if you think, well, if everything was just perfect, if everything was my way, you know, if it was rainy when I wanted it to rain and sunny when I wanted it to be sunny, and the weatherman called me each night, you know, saying, what do you want tomorrow to make your perfect day? You can't have all that. But when we're discontent and miserable, we've given up our hearts in exchange for something we still didn't get. Content but not complacent. This was a description made about Adam. And that was really who he was. He could get by on just about nothing. But he wasn't complacent. He was improving himself. Not complaining, but improving himself. In conclusion, contentment, do's and don'ts. Don't refuse to accept reality. When King Saul said, you're not going to be king anymore, did it do any good for Saul to refuse to accept that reality? Jonathan accepted that. Had a lot better heart. Don't be keeping score. Don't focus on the materialistic. Be thankful, like Paul was in Philippians 1 through 4. All the problems he faced in Philippians 1, he says, but I'm thankful for this. I'm thankful for this. I rejoice in this. Be focused, not on temporary things eternal, and be content. Thank you for your attention this morning. We're going to sing the song that has been selected. If you are outside of Christ and would like to turn your life over and confess Jesus as your Lord and be baptized into Jesus Christ in repentance, putting to death that old man, and letting the blood of Jesus wash away your sins and rising up after being buried with him to walk in newness of life. You can do that this morning. If there's sin in your life and you're a Christian, make that right with God. If it's something that you need to make right with your brethren, you can come forward and let that be made known, or if you want prayers on your behalf. If you're subject in any way, won't you come while we stand and sing?